When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Book four is, this is so good.
It's the Star Trek Kobayashi Maru thing of like the whole.
I'm going to pretend that I know what you just said there. I'm nodding my head.
It's fine.
Yep.
His ex-girlfriend's cat named Princess Donut. And then the cat starts talking.
Da 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 da.
Welcome everyone to a Tutor Realm podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about one of my new favorite series, Dungeon Crawler Carl. This time it's book four, The Gate to the Feral Gods.
Rich, we have done this journey together, and the first three books that we read, you were already from the get-go.
I was on the Carl train pretty early on.
And that was before book three with the trains. Sorry. Yep. We're staying spoiler light for 5-10-ish minutes, but it's book four. So if you guys want to be convinced to read this series, start with our book one review of Dungeon Crawler Carl. We're on book four here. And Rich, I got to say, book one through three felt like when you're going to a nursing home and you're just spending time with your grandparent and you feel bad, or maybe you're volunteering to speak with them about their hobbies. And it's just, you know, you feel bad. So you go and you play checkers with them. Rich, the first three, I really enjoyed them, but sometimes it felt like playing checkers because I was going, you know, you love it so much. It's so adorable. You know, you love your little Princess Donut. It's so cute. And I was doing it for you.
Okay.
Book four, I am now doing it for myself. I am on board. Books one through three are really good.
Yeah, buddy.
Book four is, this is so good. This is so fun.
Great. Yeah. I am so happy to hear it.
I get the love that you have for this, and it's definitely the best book so far of the series up to book four.
Yeah, up to book four, it's the best book so far.
We're staying spoiler free for if someone's just clicking on book four for some reason and doesn't know what Dungeon Crawler Carl is. Can you give a quick pitch of, hey, this is what the series is, what the genre is, and then we'll get right to our stuff.
Sure. So this is a lit RPG book. What caveat to that? This is not the same as a bunch of other lit RPGs that you may know of. A lot more focus into the character and the outside world and a bunch of other things that go along with it. However,
what is lit RPG for those who don't know as well?
Literature RPG typically means that it's normally a level grinding system. So it's magic in the sense of, you know, main character starts at level one and then grinds and then defeats bosses and gains XP. And then that's basically it. Mm. Now, this book series starts off with the end of humanity. Most of humanity is dead, crushed down into the ground. And the few people on the globe that survive this calamity, that were outside as every single structure was crushed into the ground, they get the option to go into a dungeon, which is a televised survival game event for the rest of the universe. And that's how the company that bought Earth makes its money back, is selling ads on this grand death game.
What a kick-ass concept of a book.
Also, Carl, our main protagonist, goes into the dungeon with his ex-girlfriend's cat named Princess Donut. And then the cat starts talking. Talking cat. It's great. That's the pitch. That's the pitch to the story. I'm hoping that you read it. And for some reason, if you're just going, I haven't read the books and I haven't watched the previous three videos, but I'm going to listen to these guys talk about book four for some reason. You've been warned. Here we are.
Here we are. And so we're going to spoil up to book three, not book four yet, just to say, Rich, what's your spoiler-free Ramble rating for book four?
Yeah, this is a 4.5. I think it's spectacular. Kick ass.
4.25 for me. I think it's really freaking good. It's,
yeah.
It is the best by, I would say, by a wide margin from the other three, to where this does multiple things individually better than any of the previous did. Every category that we have, it kind of just does them better. It's I'm pretty much as emotionally invested. Characters are even better. Plots even better. It just down the line, what we're getting out of this book for me is the lit RP genres, which you aptly described. I was getting a little bit fatigued with it. Is it just, you know, boss battle, get XP, fight, get through the level, done. The thing that's special about Dungeon Crawler Carl, now Gate of the Feral Gods, book four, is this, again, without keeping it very light, this takes us more outside the scope of just the game. Mm-hmm. That's what's so important for me. The story is grander than just the game, which the game can be fun, but now we're getting, the stakes have been raised. And I don't think we could do much more. We're on book four. We might as well start spoiling this thing and give a warning to readers out there. We're going to spoil. This will be up to book four, Dungeon Crawler Carl, The Gate of the Feral Gods.
All spoilers.
Spoiler time. You're ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
What did you give Emotional Impact out of 5 stars?
Yeah, 4.5.
Okay. That tracks. Your overall score is pretty much going to be the same as Emotion most of the time with these books, because that's what it's going for.
Most of the time. Yeah, especially these books.
For me, 4.25. Really great. Again, it's same as my overall score. This is what hones in for me why this book is... The emotion I felt at some of the pivotal scenes in this book... Oh, my God. Oh, my... Rich, what... There are three major scenes, and then we can go into the smaller stuff. I'm going to bullet point them, then we'll go deep.
Yeah.
Carl kills the admin.
Yeah.
Carl looks in the sky, says, "Fuck you, hunters. Come at me. I will break you." And number three, at the end, we see Beatrice and the epilogue and just the freaking curiosity and pull I have going on. And that doesn't even mention the small bullet points of we get Maggie and Chris and more development there and continuation. And Lucia Mars, we start to see what a freaking menace she is, and that's setting up for future books. All that to say...
You get Quan C. H. and ripping his arm up. That's just fun. But
that's just a good time. That's just a typical Tuesday, yeah.
The rage. You start seeing the, like, something's a little off. Carl is not just, like, great guy. He's also terrifying sometimes. People have are afraid of him for a good reason.
Yeah, I would always compare you to Carl the first three books. I'm scared to compare you to Carl now. Carl's got an edge to him.
A little bit.
So out of all those emotional moments, which one for you do you want to go like, this is what did it for this book?
Mm.
Because I would
thing
say...
is, yeah. There's another moment that was more emotionally touching for me.
Oh, say it.
It was the moment when Carl was about to kill Maggie inside of Chris's body. And the whole plan of him knowing that he has to do it. Chris, everyone thinks set up. Chris even says, like, please kill me. Like, I am in pain. This is torture. Please put me out of my misery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Donut stops it and saves Chris and Maggie and lets them go. And just looks at him going, like, Carl, that I know this is not good for you. This would not be help. Like, yes, it does need to be done. Like that was something that she wasn't against it happening, and especially in the context of the previous book of her killing a person for a first time.
Yeah.
And what that weighed on her of her trying to protect Carl from that same emotional baggage. She knows that she just killed a random person who tried to attack her. This is a situation where Carl is killing a friend and someone he does care about. And she knows, like, I can't let Carl go through that. And so she stops him and protects him. Moment. such a touching moment between the two, and I love how protective she is of not just him physically, but emotionally.
Wow.
I loved that moment.
That is a great moment. I can't believe I glossed over it. I love that moment, too.
It was set up so perfectly to actually happen. Like, I genuinely thought Carl was going to kill him.
That whole moment for me emphasizes my point for a lot of these books, where I think the point of Dungeon Crawler books is, one, hey, make you smile, laugh, but also make you tense and just feel for these characters, obviously. But then there's actual stakes to the story. And there's an actual human. It's not just NPCs. Even NPCs are taken seriously. Where I'd say this mini complaint is I'm not laugh out loud a lot of the times. I think Dungeon Crawler Carl, in a weird part, it's almost like the primary emotion should be laugh and fun. I feel much more tense and stakes and investment and all those edge of my seat, what's going to happen next, more than I am laughing. And there are there's your humor-filled moments, but I guess what I would expect from these books is for me to just laugh and jokes and then not take it very seriously, kind of just be one of those, Discworlds are perfect, okay? I love me some Discworld, but a Discworld book where they have great themes and messages, but the whole time I'm smiling and laughing. It's absurd, it's funny, and that's the primary emotion is laughter. I expected with Dungeon Crawler Carl it to be laughter. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a lot less laughter and just more, I'm invested in this story. Just give me more of the story. It's got the kind of fun situational comedy. If it's a cat that talks and the ridiculous things you could do. And a parasite is in Chris's head, who is a rock monster who your ex-girlfriend's sentient cat is preventing you from emotionally destructing by having a skull over your head from killing this. Just, again, conceptually, it's so strange, but I'm taking it so seriously and going, oh, I care. So much. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and the right now the comedy for me is mostly coming out of the AI.
Yeah.
The AI is the funniest part of these books.
Do you remember this book?
Increasingly getting more insane. Oh.
Because I know you read on, but I can give you, just so you don't spoil me, because I know you read on, the AI foot fetish in this one got even worse, because it was the moment where the AI is just going to Carl, like, is pissed off that Carl isn't squishing. and Carl starts to go, what the fuck? What?
Like, the fact that the AI legitimately is fucking with, like, breaking the rules of the game because Carl isn't squishing things with his feet. It's like, fulfill my fetish or I'm going to murder you. And Carl just going, God damn it. Has to squish the hamster.
It's so sad.
Oh, God. It's so disturbing.
Yeah. It is one of those weird situational, absurd, but also the fact that in the world, it's explained that the AI is almost it's a being of its own. It gets its own area after the game ends.
And it's becoming more unhinged. And you can tell book to book, all of the AI descriptions are getting more lengthy and unhinged and going more into the AI's opinions rather than just like book one. It's straight up description and it's like a clear goal of, oh, I'm kind of making fun of you humans. But it feels like a setup, like it's going for a theme. It's not giving its own opinion. And as the books go on, like even in book three, it's starting to give its opinion and starting to go on little mini rants of like, I don't get this about you humans. And it starts like just talking to people. And now it's just going off the rails.
Yeah, I am.
To a point where Carl's going, like reading the text and going, that's not what he said. Like something's off. And he's copying it and saving it for later because it feels like it's getting edited out.
Yeah. It is cool. And I don't know where it exactly is going to go. But I would say the AI counts as a character when we're talking about characters.
Yeah.
Because do you want to go on to emotionally? We loved it. There's those major scenes we have to talk about before we move on. The Carl killing admin, Carl saying F you out there, I'm coming. Those big moments increase the scale of the story. And you also see from Carl's point of view why he has such fervor, why he is just ready to demolish. And we see this whole time he's saying, they will not break me, they will not break me, they will not break me. And although I don't want to go too much into characters yet, but it's so important for how we felt about these scenes where he's constantly saying, they will not break me. And he's solving these book by book issues. He's going book one, get through level one, level through, book two, get through the level three grounds, and everything that he's doing is kind of self-contained, despite he's saving people who continue on as characters with him. But this book, he turns from the "they will not break me" to "I'm going to break you." And that flip of a switch turns him into such an act, more active protagonist, and turns the whole stakes of the story into, you know what, now I don't know what to expect. This game could, at the snap of your fingers, Matt Dinneman could just create, I don't know, the game could break, the AI could break, Carl could break. Every scene now is just more and more tense.
Oh,
he killed the admin. And
just the whole plan of how they're, it's plans within plans of realizing, okay, they don't want me to use this gate of the Feral Gods because I could break the level and things like that. And just okay. But then they allow him to do it because it would be cool for television. So, they want him to use it, but only in certain ways. He could break things. And so then he convinces them basically of the plan he's going to use it for. And then he uses it in different – and then sends that flood across the next level and wipes out the NPCs and kills a bunch of the people. And basically oh my God, the next level, fucking messed up. How the hell are we going to – well, no, he sends them down not to the next level.
Level 9, I think.
Level 9. Yes.
And level 6 is the hunting grounds, but level 9 just gets flooded.
Yeah, and wipes out all the NPCs and a bunch of other players, and now they're going, oh crap, what the hell do we do?
Yeah.
And so now they're on the back foot, and so good.
It's amazing, and I think even the moment with the lawyer / not lawyer judge, not the lawyer, sorry, the person afterward who comes and
– The adjudicator,
yeah, and talks to Carl saying, this was the smartest way to kill an admin ever, but I know you did it. I can't prove it, but I know you did. But he can't – but – so trying to get Carl to sign off.
And even further, he knows something of this – you didn't do this by yourself. I know it. We've had other people. We've had other players kill an admin.
Who's your informant?
Who's the informant? How did you do this? There's no way you did this by yourself. Enter this. He didn't. He had the cookbook.
Yeah.
And him and the previous crawlers did this.
Yes.
Together. It's a collective effort.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I love that. Anarchist cookbook previous crawler pals came together and were able to kill this admin.
And based on the failed attempt of one of the previous cookbook crawlers, he failed but led Carl to being able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. And then we have that moment at the end where he's going to the sky saying, I'm going to break you all. Or he says in his head he's saying that, but to the sky he's saying, come and try to get it. I'm going to literally kill you all.
I'm going to wipe you all out. It's your Rorschach, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me.
Yes.
And just how much that this floor has been kind of hyped up, that the other characters the Maestro and plenty of other outside the dungeon characters saying hey, you're going to get hunted on the sixth floor. Yep. You are dead. Yep. This has been hyped up so much, and just always a great fear of this is the turn. This is the turning point of – yeah, a lot. The story kind of the dungeon story kind of takes a backseat after this because, after we do other things, this is where most of the crawlers are going to die.
Yeah.
And then Carl turning on his head nope, we're killing all of you. This is not a hunting ground for you guys to pick us off. We're coming after you.
Yep.
Yeah.
It feels so good.
The indomitable human spirit. Yes.
Let's go humanity. And then the very end, we get the epilogues where the pacifist group, fascinating there, we'll get into his world stuff, but mainly with Beatrice and Beatrice's boyfriend, sleepy thing, whatever, Brad or Chad, whatever his name is.
I don't think his name is Chad, but I think it's the appropriate name.
Chad.
It's Chad.
Chad Bosley. Something like what's that? Ned's Declassified. What was his name? Mosley? Remember Mosley from Ned's Declassified? You never watched that show, did you?
No.
You were a PBS kid, weren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So going back onto this, the Beatrice being there, I love the epilogue of course we know Beatrice is gonna from book one. I went, okay, when's Beatrice coming? Beatrice finally being there and hinting at what plot element this will be in the future, I trust Matt Dinneman already with from book three and the Hecla plot twist and this and the Carl change. I know however Beatrice is going to be used, it's going to be so good. And it got me so excited that finally we're getting Beatrice. We've been talked about for so long because it's very tough when we entered the dungeon with just Carl and Princess Donut. Everybody else we're meeting is a part of Carl's life after the dungeon. So you can get these connections with Chris. You can get these connections with the two new characters, the kind of hippie guys and all these fun characters and Elle and et cetera. But it means something completely different to have someone from the previous world. Because Donut and Carl have that connection no one else will have because they have all the history together beforehand. And that's what makes Bea so can add such a good element to this is because she was there in the before. That's going to be awesome. I'm so ready for that.
Also seeing Bea, and like now we actually get to see her perspective, even just briefly, was interesting. Because you see her through Carl's eyes and Donut's eyes as just, I don't know, all the negative qualities. Like, there's no good side to be, really, that you see through memories of Carl, really. Like, just, you know, just kind of playing with Carl a little bit and looks down on him and, of course, cheats on him and doesn't respect him and all this stuff. And then you see, like, end of the world comes, like, she is a broken mess, an absolute mess. And the fact that Carl breaking up with her actually affected her greatly, that she left, but one left and brought her boy to run with her too.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So like, but she's clearly unhinged. And I, for some reason, I find that interesting.
It is. It's very interesting.
She's not like a maliciously evil person. She just, it's kind of messed up.
Yeah. And how much of that was from the apocalypse?
Yeah.
So, too early to tell for me. Don't give me much more on B.
No.
So,
I'll hold off
on anything else with B other than that's what I got, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Why isn't the emotional impact a 5 for you? Why only a 4 or 5? Because we gave it very high scores, but why not higher?
Because it can go higher.
Because you gave book one a 4.5 on emotion and this as well. So you think these are like top tier, really felt good for these, if I'm remembering correctly. I think you think those
I don't think I was completely floored for this one.
Yeah.
Maybe I could bump it up a slightly bit higher, but I do think it's spectacular.
Got it.
I didn't have too many out loud moments. That's the main deal. Like I was still pretty I was going crazy about it, but not out loud.
My two out loud moments were killing the admin and speech. I was kind of like fist pumping. Yeah. And then when Beatrice was there, I was like, oh, finally. I think I said it. I was like, oh, there we go. Yeah. So those were my three moments for sure. I'd say why not higher for me? Just because when we rate things very high, it's hard to talk. We have to give both sides a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say for me, the payoff and the promise, I'm all there for. So the one thing that keeps me away from fives with these so far is that sometimes with the progress and the beating bosses, and although I liked it a lot, the big puppy.
Yeah.
and I liked a lot of the progress part of killing, and to get to the grander stakes. So a lot of the progress portion of the book, that is the lit RPG genre. I'm just not the biggest lit RPG fan. I'm here because I'm loving the characters and the story as a whole. It's tough for me to go page by page and just feeling even the Gate of the Feral Gods portion, which is good because of the flood it causes and all that, those elements to the plot. The progress itself, which we didn't even really talk about emotionally, about the head. There's all this crazy stuff. We'll get into it plot. All I mean is that because it's lit RPG, that's just my personal taste, is not loving the XP kind of grind thing. And the fact that I'm rating this so highly for something that I'm not super into, to me is just amazing. I really love it. It's just not my personal 10 out of 10.
Sure. Yeah. I really like that stuff just mainly because to giving you think what about, what if.
Yeah.
Like how are the Gate of the Feral Gods is interesting in the sense of, okay, this is a tool that one, the game is being accelerated. So the AI and system is giving players more powerful weapons that shouldn't they shouldn't have quite yet.
For sure.
And now you're going, okay, the writers of the game don't want them to have this. Why? And so now I'm thinking, like, it just is, gets me thinking of how this will be used and what's so special about it. So I like that stuff.
Well, how much does this book get you thinking on the thought-provokingness? 5 stars for thought-provokingness. What would you give it? I give it a
4. 4 out of 5 stars. I think it's really great.
I gave a 3.5. I think it's good. I actually liked some of the thought-provokingness more on some of the previous. They're all in the same range. Mm-hmm. But 4 for you is pretty great. So why 4? What for this message? Is that human spirit?
The indomitable human spirit.
Is that what it is?
So good. There's also plenty of other elements of so first off, it's the human connection between Carl and Donut and Carl's emotional state on taking another life and what it means to kill someone else, to end the life of someone else is interesting take on this book. Of that you're killing a bunch of NPCs and killing a bunch of these creatures, and how it's not the same. And a little part of you is broken when that happens in whatever context, even if it's in the like setting up in the best of context, like where Carl is put in the position where it's fully explainable. Like there's very little guilt to be had of killing Chris because like Chris is asking for it. He's in torture. This set up a perfect scenario of where perfectly justified. And Donut even stops him and says, like, even though it may be justified, like, it could break you. And I'm not going to let you go through that.
Right.
I like that. I really like what it means to take another life and how that affects you. Mm-hmm. Then the fighting back against the oppressive system and everything it involves of the balance between how Carl is both a liability to the system, but also he's their greatest asset. He's the number one crawler.
Mm-hmm.
He is making them so much money. And then the aspect of, yeah, you cost them a lot of money. You cost the system a fuck ton of money. You would be hurting their pocket, but you're also making them more money than you're costing them. And that's why you're alive. Like, you're a thorn in the system, and yet really, he's still kind of a cog. Like, all of the stuff that he's fucking with him on, he's still making him more money than that.
All right.
And I find that interesting how much when you're fighting against the system that you're actually working within it and you're just upholding the system. This is the kind of the first time in the books. Like, he's been doing a little bit of both. This time he's got plans for no. I don't just want to like mess with them. I want to break it. And the only way to break it is like I got to take it down to the point where they're not even making money on it anymore. That's the ultimate end goal of this needs to collapse under its own weight. And so he's right now still having to play the game of I need to make them more money than I'm costing them. But eventually it's going to come a point of he's going to cost them more money than he's making them. Then we'll see where it goes.
You convinced me. I'm opening my rating to I had 3.5. I'll go 3.75 and maybe even 4 because I definitely love that human aspect. And it's good. It's really good. And I like that Carl is contemplating how much the cost of taking a life is now. And that's kind of what I got out of it. You're right. I missed that whole aspect of, yes, clearly that's there in the book. I didn't even think of that when I was rating this because that liability versus asset. And you see in a lot of books where the way to take down the system is to have the powers, the hegemony fight against each other and to collapse in on itself. And obviously that's an element here. So having Borant versus Valtek versus what's this pacifist group. So the people that are more powerful than you have to kind of butt heads for you to have some vacuum or have some help to win. But the other thing that I don't see a lot either is how much of an asset or liability are you to the system? Because if, again, you I won't repeat exactly what you said, just going into how that aspect of it, I don't think goes into a lot of these revolution books. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the revolution books, find a way to work with somebody that has needs you under their wing, or you're working on a certain side, versus you are working directly with the people you're trying to take down.
Well, right now, Carl is the controlled opposition.
The controlled opposition, yeah.
He's working against the system, yet in a way that helps perpetuate it.
Right.
And at some point, Carl's going to become the uncontrolled opposition.
That's great.
That's going to be fun. But that's a interesting side of things. That how defeating must that feel? Of all the previous anarchists from the anarchist cookbook, of how much they were trying to stick a thorn in the side of the of this system of the whole games, and yes, ultimately just kind of played into it. And ultimately just made another, like, all of their spectacle they're going into trying to break it, ultimately just made it a more entertaining episode, and then they die in the end. Like, everything they're trying to do against it actually just made the system stronger.
That's great.
And so, I like that.
Want to go into characters?
Yeah.
That's perfectly said. So, characters, what'd you give that out of 5 stars?
4.5. I thought they were spectacular.
Same
for all the stuff I was talking about with, like, the...
Yep. 4.5 as well, on the dot. Love them.
All the connection between Donut and Carl, amazing. I love Katya. Katya just gets even better. Oh, I'm upset. I'm upset about Katya leaving the party. I don't want her to go.
Come on, homegirl.
why are you leaving?
Come on, Katya. No.
But it does carry forward something that I'm glad wasn't really dropped. There was a moment in book 3.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think it was
one moment.
Was it book 3 or book 2? No, it was book 3. Basically, where Carl is just kind of moving Katya around. I was just like, hey, put on this backpack, do this, do that. And Donut actually having to tell Carl, you're kind of backseat crawler here. You're just kind of telling people to do things and assuming they're going to do it. Like, you didn't even ask Katya's opinion on this.
To be fair, Carl's always right.
Yeah, but even Katya says, like, stop it. Don't tell me what to, like, I'm going to figure this out myself. Like, let me have input in my own life.
And the fact that when Carl was gone with the 5-day audit, again, you put it with the adjunct, the purveyor, the person, what's the word you used earlier?
The adjudicator.
The adjudicator, that word. Yes. The adjudicator and was... have gone for 5 days and Katya was able to actually survive on her own. And when Carl came back, his reaction was proud of her, but also a little upset or selfishly, egotistically upset because, oh, wait, she doesn't need me. I thought I was more important, but everything kind of ran without me.
Yeah.
And just the fact that things ran without Carl made him think a lot less, like, oh, I guess Katya can do it. So it was a great element to let Katya actually work on her own for those 5 days so that she did have the confidence to go out on her own.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which is important, but also it brings more into Carl's character. I like Carl being, he's the hero, he's the protagonist.
Yeah.
but also he's kind of, we're starting to notice of his control problems. Like, ultimately, he has a real hard time letting go of control. He wants to be in charge, and he's gets really nervous of listening to someone else's plan. He's like, normally, like, he'll be like, oh yeah, let's go with your plan. And then at the last second, he just changes the plan and he'll take charge because he feels very uncomfortable with authority, of anyone kind of taking right. authority from him. And yeah, it's a great moment for him of realizing, like, oh, I'm actually kind of bummed and things didn't fall apart because it means I'm not as important to this. It's a great flaw. Great flaw for him to reflect on.
That's one of his flaws, and I think that's one of his the more important ones too, if that flaw mm-hmm. of needing control, but also his flaw of what would you say in this? The flaws, wants, needs, where he is flawed because he almost thinks too highly of NPCs. He's almost too human mm. in a sense where I guess you could look at it as a flaw if we're using that term more loosely, but his a flaw of he wants to save everyone, protect everybody. That's it. It literally says in the book, yeah. So
yeah.
His flaw of I have to protect everybody, have to do it. What he wants to do, he wants to protect everybody, and he's flawed because he has this human emotional reaction which prevents him what he needs to realize, at least for this book, he needed to realize you can't protect everybody, and there has to be some cannon fodder to break this system. And almost the lesson here is, well, unless we'll see where the future book goes, but the lesson's the wrong word. What Carl realizes is a necessary evil to defeat the evil is a little bit of cannon fodder, a little bit of the ends justifying the means for this. So
yeah.
Although, hey,
you don't want it to go down that path of you don't want to see Carl become less of himself. And it's what's really endearing about him is he will find a way. He will find another. It's the Star Trek Kobayashi Maru thing of like the whole.
I'm going to pretend I know what you just said there. I'm nodding my head.
It's fine.
Yep.
I'll give quick thing of Captain James T. Kirk goes through a test in Starfleet. And the whole test is about confronting failure. And you're putting this in it. The Kobayashi Maru is a situation where there's nothing you can do. You will lose. It's how you handle losing. What do you do in that situation? Well, Kirk cheats. He beats the Kobayashi Maru, but the whole game is rigged. And so, because of that, I rigged it back. And so he beat it by cheating. And that's because, like, hey, that's not the point. He says, no, there's always another way. That's kind of his motto and like input. Put in certain scenarios, like, oh, you have – it's option A or option B. Kirk always finds option C. It's the same thing with Carl. Carl's given option A and B. He finds C and D. Always will find a different way. Mm. Doesn't accept what the options that are given.
But then in this case, the whole flood and him killing the NPCs
mm-hmm.
kind of had to do – was forced into a position or had to do something to change from the status quo. And maybe he's a personal philosophy I have as well, and I think is more of an apt description here, is the ends don't justify the means, they explain the means. Sure. I think Carl's not justifying going, this is right. I don't think anybody that, hey, if you gave me the button right now to, hey, press this button and one person dies, if you don't press the button, a million people die. Typical like that. I think every person would still press the button, but not become a consequentialist. I don't think that justifies us becoming utilitarian and being, hey, a million outdoes one. No, even the action of itself that you're doing, I mean, hey, end of the world, apocalypse. Literally everybody dies unless you press this button and kill one person. There's a certain line or extreme that will get everybody to do the thing, the action that will make you cause an actual moral action to an individual or to somebody for a greater good. And I think villains typically go for the greater good in a lot of books and stories because it is bad. It's wrong. The wrong action is for the greater good.
Yeah.
That is, but the more nuanced way of looking at it is when we always make moral and immoral decisions in our everyday lives, and we're not saying, hey, this justifies killing these people. This justifies doing this. how do you justify a white lie? Okay, I could justify a white lie because I'm keeping a secret, because I want to keep the secret so that I can surprise you for your birthday. Okay, it justifies the lie. The ends justify the means. Now, when it's something more serious, where Carl's killing NPCs, which have this sentience that was created, the ends are more explaining the means he has to go through. He doesn't want to do this, but they're literally forcing him. We're talking about all these hypotheticals, the train analogy.
The trolley problem,
where, okay, do you change the trolley tracks to kill the one person? Do you keep it on the five? Well, you forced me into this hand dungeon. Don't act like this is a decision all of a sudden that I'm the bad person.
The whole system does that to him.
Exactly.
Of like calling humans monsters, of like, oh, look at what you don't like.
Look what you did.
This is pretty messed up.
We just solved the trolley problem. The trolley problem, you're not the bad person. The person that asks you the question is the bad person. They are the dungeon.
Yeah, basically, the amount of times that the system is going, calling the crawlers messed up, and like, oh, look at the evil crap you did. It's like, what do you mean? You put me here.
You killed a person on the train track. What do you mean? You said either I killed five or I pulled the... You're the problem, not me. Don't look at me like I'm the bad person. That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I do think this helped me look at the trolley problem differently. It's your fault,
Rich. It's the people who wrote out the trolley problem. It's their fault.
I think we could do a thesis on this. This is fascinating. So, and that is just... That's Carl, and that's why this is spectacular for characters. Mm-hmm. And the only reason maybe I'm not going 5 out of 5 for characters, I'm a little upset Princess Donut's getting a little bit of a...
Agreed.
A little shafted. I want more Princess Donut.
You're going to get a little bit more.
Good.
Book 5 of them. Okay. Some good donut moments.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's what... If you want to ask, like, oh, why is this only 4.5 and not 5? Agreed.
So I rated it correctly.
Exactly.
Good. And then
book 5 is this, but more donut.
Great. Excellent. Because what I'm seeing, again, love Sev is always great. The AI, as we discussed, love how the AI is becoming more sentient and interesting, having motivations of its own, but also fetishes of its own. Just a wild card. We were introduced to, I have the name, Louise and Ferez. The cool new hippie duo,
yeah,
Katya, as we discussed, but the Princess Donut, I was really enjoying how in books 2 and 3, we're starting to see hints from Donut on how she's more than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we had that one scene in this book where Princess Donut sends away Maggie and Chris to protect Carl. If we didn't get more of Princess Donut's character progression as much, just not a ton. She's still an amazing character, but I was looking for a little more.
I also like how she sees Carl. Carl sees himself of like, he has to protect Princess Donut, and he's willing to do the hard things for her and like keeping, you know, her paws clean. Donut sees the same thing with Carl of like, she tells Carl like, no, you can't have a player killer skull above your head. No, like you're the hope. You're the good of this dungeon. You're the hero. I can do that. And she sees herself of like wants to shield him from the dark elements of the game and wants to protect him from the messy stuff.
Yeah.
And so they both see each other in that same protective light.
It's so nice. Yeah, it is
so good. Love it.
Yeah, I'm with you. These characters are just they're the best.
Also,
yeah.
The hippie duo is just rules really funny.
They're fun. Yeah.
Just like, how the hell did you survive this long?
How the hell are you marrying what's her name now? Louise and
the shapeshifter.
Yes,
the shapeshifter prostitute person. Yeah,
the changeling.
The changeling.
I forget her name, but yes, now it's just a cute little bow tie. Yeah, at the end.
Just like, we're getting married.
Oh,
like, oh,
oh, okay,
okay.
All right.
How he messed himself up of like showing the picture of the person's mom, like one of the leader's moms. It's like, oh, she's hot. She's like, turn into that. And it's like, Carl going, no, don't do it. You're so screwed.
That was good. Yeah. If you the AI gave the pictures of the moms, right? That I think it was the AI.
Yes.
Again, showing that the AI didn't have to do that, but did.
No.
And so the AI is, again, toying around. It's getting, yeah. AI might be my favorite character by next book. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Okay, want to go on to plot?
Yep.
What would you give plot out of 5 stars?
4.25.
exactly the same, 4.25. Really great
plot. Really great plot.
Yep.
Yeah, just everything involved with the bubbles, the idea of, hey, it, right out of the get-go, we get a kind of a new twist. Like the last floor we had, everyone kind of really working together. We got to see Carl saving a bunch of people and going, hey, look, we're here together. We, if, you know, humanity, apes together strong, you know.
don't say our motto on screen. That's what we do.
But the beginning of this floor, the kill lady says, like, hey, a lot more of you survived that last floor than we anticipated. It's nice, you guys all working together and same. It's so heartwarming. But that's none of that this time. No, we're separating you off. You're all in individual bubbles, and you either sink or swim by yourself. That's it. Which, by the way, Carl breaks that rule by the end. It's like, fuck you, I am going to help you.
Chooses option C.
He chooses option C, and he still saves people.
Yep.
It's great. But a good setup and change for this plot.
Yeah, agreed. Also a lot more understandable than book 3's plot.
Yeah.
Hell of a lot more.
A hell of a lot more understandable.
Again, really enjoyed some plot moments from book 3. There were some, but the Hecla was just shined. Mm-hmm. The biggest disappointment is that the payoff from last book was not understanding and the train sequences all that much. But then this book, bubbles, simple bubbles, pop. They pop.
Bubble pop.
There's
good.
Four things per bubble. Got it.
Solve the four puzzles of the bubble.
Desert, air, earth, fire, water, air.
Good. Understand. I just love in the very beginning of how much of how their manager, Mordecai, is like, oh. We're leaning on, oh, you can't go into the other section until those crawlers beat the area. And it was just, oh, fuck. So it was immediately going, yeah, we're not depending on them. All of them, everyone else is a fuck up. We're going to have to solve this whole thing ourselves.
And then Maggie / Chris ended up solving one before they even did. So,
yeah.
But exactly. Mordecai, what was he this book? A toad? Wait, do I have that wrong? I forget it because am I mixing what he was in book 3? Because I've also started reading book 5, so I'm getting confused. Let me not give anything further than what Mordecai was this book.
No, he was a tiny furry creature.
The cute furry
the
creature.
The cute thing. He was really cute and very small.
Are you sure that's squeaky not book voice? 5? I don't know. Okay, let's cut it off because I'm forgetting I'm Mordecai. Okay. So
one of two. Sorry.
But with the big plot points I have down or the sequences we had was the Maggie Chris. We had the dungeon gods plot line, and now that he's actually worshiping a new god by the end, we didn't even mention that thus far. So we had the Maggie Chris plot line, the dungeon itself and the bubbles, puppy, etc. The admin Carl plot line, which involves fighting the admins, and then we also have killing the admin, flooding level 9, and then getting the adjudicator.
The adjudicator.
Adjudicator. Holy crap. I can't say that word. It's the ADJs are very hard for me to say. Adjudicator.
Adjudicator.
That sounds racist. But I'll go with it. Adjudicator.
You know a catering service?
Yeah.
Adjudicator.
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 I love it. Just start fill in your ethnicity here. A cater. So yeah, those three different plot lines, and then obviously you have a part of the admin Carl plot line, the grander scheme of the pacifists and getting those sponsors. And what do you think is going to happen? Because you know, what do you think when you read this of what happened?
Oh, it's just another seed of like, oh, this is going to pay off good because like gotcha. Clearly like the pacifists. The pacifist group is for Carl.
Yeah.
He's the least pacifist. That seems like a weird sponsor. Yeah. But also, they have a lot of money. They have a surprising amount of money.
They gave him the thing that allowed him to chuck the head with like, the puppy. The
highly
head,
specific.
The puppy chucker. The head puppy chucker.
The sex doll head.
Yes. We're on the same. Yeah. Just chuck.
But no. One, super expensive. So, like, this pacifist group has a ton of money.
Yeah.
Two, they had a plan. Like, this is well thought out of, like, no, they have things in motion. They have their own plans for Carl, like, to help in this game. So now we got them. Like, they're planning something. And so another interesting foil. So
absolutely. And the, again, pays off a bunch in this book, but then the setup for next books, the epilogue, love the epilogue where we see B, boyfriend Brad. And I like how boyfriend Brad was mentioning, oh yeah, that cuck of a boyfriend, Carl, her cuck boyfriend, finally grew a pair and broke up with her after the Instagram post. And just to see that, how Brad viewed, I think his name was Brad, how Brad viewed Carl as this cuck, and now we see where he is.
Yeah, it's a good cathartic moment. Brad saying, like, oh yeah, I should be the king of this apocalypse,
the kind
of
thing. Like, yeah.
And I'm gonna rule this apocalypse. This is my time. Like, I'm the hero. And again, is it a complex thing? No, but it's cathartic of seeing, like, him where he is and what he thinks he can be, and then compared to, like, Carl is kind of the king of the apocalypse.
I feel like Matt
he legitimately is.
Is this wish fulfillment? I don't know Matt Dinneman's life, but did he have an ex at one point that went off with some, like, rich, hot guy, and he just wishes the world ended and he was part of I don't know. Authors sometimes project a little bit, and I could totally see me being like, oh, yeah, I would totally kick ass in the apocalypse, and my ex would be so jealous. Like, I could see that kind of working. But the epilogue got me with both seeing B, and also we got I think the name was Sadir. I can't even say it right. I have it spelled down, but I don't know if that's the right pronunciation.
Let me see.
Sadir. Well, that's the audiobook. I don't even know if that's how you spell it, because that's how I heard it. I remember it was like an S name, and I forget if it was Sadir or something. One of those, they were on Earth's surface, and we got to see them looking for humans on Earth's surface. And then we saw B and Brad. And we also got to saw the pacifist group and two different figureheads. One was talking about how they don't think Carl's the guy. Like, well, this guy's a loose cannon. And the other one going, he's our guy. Trust. He's our guy. He's him.
And what theory do you have? Like, why do they think he's the guy? Because I think there's enough context clues that I think you can kind of piece it together already.
One of them could be that he is...
Like, who's the pacifist? I think there's enough clues because I already theorized.
Oh, like, who it is?
Yeah, who's the pacifist group? What are the members of?
Oh.
Like, what's their connection? What's their connection to Carl? Because I think there's enough stuff in there that I had a prediction and I was right.
You were? Okay.
But that's why I can't say my theory, because I was
so
right.
So it's what's their connection to Carl? Why are they sponsoring him?
Yep. And, like, this is the guy. And they start complaining, like, hey, he couldn't figure this out. It took him forever.
Right. So my gut reaction is this group supporting him because he could end the crawl. So my guess is they're the pacifist group, but in order to, they're helping Carl because he's the only one that would work with them. Possibly. I don't know anything beyond that. Of the pacifist group, seems like their end goal is to end the crawl. And how do you end the crawl other than getting the person who's screwing up the crawl the most? Other than that.
So you no idea on how else they're connected to Carl.
I haven't thought about it. Now I can theorize.
I think the clues are there that you can figure it out.
Shoot, now I'm going to think after this video because I don't want to sit here and think for 5 minutes. But
main thing for me was the yam. The yam got it.
Okay.
That was the connection.
Was a yam?
Remember the yam he got? That it was key. It was a key ingredient to breaking the... to getting freeing Chris from Maggie.
Got it.
And like they gave him this yam. And it was like,
oh, that's
this is
right,
super
that's
rare.
Right. Oh,
and
I actually
weird.
Didn't pay attention to that. That that makes sense.
And
okay.
they were completely like, it took him forever to use the yam. But how did he use it?
Oh.
Where did he get, like,
well, don't give me any more. Yeah, don't give me any more. Okay, so when he gets ingredients or something like that, I forgot about the yam.
Oh,
I forgot. I completely forgot about that. So, okay, I'll have to think now.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about it. But okay, so you're going to be excited. So that from plot point to plot point, I think I will say my overarching opinion of the plot is great payoff, some cool progress.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
Super fun conclusion. I love them flying around, leading the puppy along. Quan CH coming around trying to steal another kill and just fuck over other players. Like, God, you start to really hate him. Oh, this cheating asshole. gets a cheat element and instead of using it to help others is just being a coward and trying to steal from everyone else.
Yep.
Like, not even just survive. He's deliberately screwing over other people for very little profit. That's the worst part about him. So you rip off his arm. And, it's great.
And you see why he had one of Quan CH's rings allowed him to get an ability to, when someone was at half health, get a notice or something like that, to where Quan CH would be incentivized to wait to kind of steal kills. He had that ping or something that told him he would get, he could tell when people were at lower health or NPCs or
bosses.
Yeah. So do you want to go on to world building?
Yeah.
What'd you give world out of 5 stars?
4.5. It's spectacular world building.
Okay.
Everything put together, this was the height of world building for these first 4 books.
Okay. I would say, I think on par for me, I would say 3.75. Very good. Maybe our biggest disagreement.
Maybe so.
Okay. Because I do agree with a lot of the AI, as we were talking throughout, AI and the grander Borant and seeing how the moving pieces behind the filter are working. Why is this the best so far for you, and why even above the other ones? Of what is so special about
this? We get way more stories with the Anarchist Cookbook. So I'm seeing a lot more of the previous crawls and how it's affected them and how this is the pinnacle. This is the knife's edge. If, you know, Carl is the knife, like, he's the point of the knife, and all of these previous crawlers are the rest of it, the blade. And seeing how the crawl has affected others, the little things about the stew, like the stew recipe of the crawler talked about, like, we pass down our knowledge and history through this recipe, and it's how we teach the next generation, and realizes, like, I can't do that anymore. Like, the sum of our knowledge is going to die with me. And I hope it doesn't. And that's why I teach this recipe. And just things like that really added to the atmosphere of the world. Anything giving me previous crawls is amazing. Love how the powers that be is not just Borant and, like, people that don't like Borant. It's now several different factions, all for their own reason. So now you have Borant, you have the Valtek, you have the Valte Corporation. Then you have the Orc Overlords that have their own game plan. You have the Pacifist Group that have their own game plan. They're going through something. Then you have all of the Audette. Audette has her own plans and circling around, like, what's she going on about? My God, there's so many different sides to mention.
I missed Audette. We didn't get a lot of her this book.
Not a lot.
I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing more of her. Yeah. I agree. The moving parts that have been there from book run, really, with we're just finding out there's more and more and more moving parts. And I think Matt Dinneman, how he's doing this, is I'm sure he doesn't have it all in his head. From book one, I mean. I don't think that he went in here knowing each of these pieces are exactly going to fit into this puzzle, because you've told me that he is more of a pantser. Mm-hmm. And I think he sets up enough motivations from these alien corporations. And then we find a little, and then a lot more information from them. I love all the history stuff in the background. I'd say for this one, this is on par with what I've rated others. I've gone from the 4 to 3.75 range. This one for me, as far as being immersed in the world, I think the bubble and the geography, the system of this floor wasn't as interesting. It was a lot more understandable than the trains. So world-wise, this is way better than the trains. The trains for me was not good. This is good. The setting of the world was just fine. And then the added on background and AI and everything you're saying is what makes it amazing. Yeah. So I'm kind of balancing where I don't think the setting itself was super compelling for me.
I really liked the story that the setting was telling.
Story was cool.
So the additional element of the guy in the pyramid tomb, of how he's researching the Gate of the Feral Gods and how he's stuck down there with that monster and everything told about it, where he falls in love with this weird monster being that's trying to use him to get out. Yeah. And then he's now trapped. Everything about that was really fun. Saying about the history of the story that the bubble is trying to tell was really fun. But as far as world building goes, I was sucked into this world. Mm. I was fully immersed, believing like it's real. It all made sense to me. I was absorbed.
That is real solid. And I agree. Even with the history in the bubble, I always like the cookbook. The history of this world's getting better and better and better as the books go on. I'm hoping one of these worlds or one of these levels we go to is just so visually compelling, or something that just, when I'm in the dungeon, there's nothing like it, or something different, to where the bubbles was just, to me, pretty, again, it's supposed to be basic. It's not a focal point, but sometimes it's hard for me in these worlds. I just kind of go, oh, lit RPG. It's like, yeah, there's bosses around and there's this, and the cool stuff is when we get into that story behind, the prostitute sex doll. That lunacy is super cool. But yeah, beyond that, I think world for me as well is, but so book five, I'm already a bit into it and I'm loving it. So I'm
good.
We'll talk about five when we get there. But until then, pros, what did you give that out of 5 stars?
A 3.75 out of 5 stars.
I gave it 3.5.
Yeah. Good pros. I think it's really good. Really good pros, especially what it does. Great character voices, the great descriptions. Everything, all is included. Really, really good. I can't give it that, great to spectacular range, just nature of what it is. I don't think it does more than the basics. It's just doing the basics really well.
I pretty much agree with that. Do you have I think we have this prepared. The best portion of the book we have on the audiobook here. Do you want to go ahead and play the scene and set up what's going on in this?
Setting you up for next book. It's intense. I love it.
This scene is where Carl just finishes pretty much the end of the book and he's looking to the sky. It's that scene that Rich and I love. He's looking at the sky, talking to the hunters of level 6.
And the setup of all the previous books are going like floor 6. Floor 6 is where they're going to hunt you. It's like intense. You want to stay. Like the reason why Mordecai keeps telling him to keep your head down, stay low to the ground, don't stand out too much. It's because floor 6, they're going to hunt you.
Yep.
And now we got Carl going down to floor 6 and his declaration.
Here we go.
Now, the number one crawler in the dungeon. I patted Donut on the head. Once the 6th floor opens, we'll all be locked in together. They'll be just as trapped as we are. I tossed the ring in the air, and I caught it. I looked up into the sky, ending all pretense that I was actually saying this to just Donut. You guys see this thing? I'll tell you what. If you want it, it's yours. It's right here. Come and get it, motherfuckers! Actually, you know what? I have a better idea. No need to come to me because I'll be coming to you. That's my pledge to you and to everyone else watching this. By the time the 6th floor collapses, every single hunter who dares to set foot on the same floor as us will be dead. Donut, Mongo, and I moved into the stairwell. This, I swear on my life. One by one, I will break you. I will break you all.
Rich, please don't be Carl. We'll see you all next episode.
Bye-bye, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.